back to the American Revolution podcast, episode 57, The Making of Two Fleets. In the last episode, we were discussing the final evacuation of the American Army out of Canada. Now, British Army has complete control of Canada, and the Americans are at the south end of Lake Champlain, preparing for the inevitable British attack. With 100 miles separating the British and American armies, there was still intense fighting in the Champlain Valley in the second half of June 1776. Except the fighting was between Philip Schuyler and the newly arrived Major General Horatio Gates. Horatio Gates was like Charles Lee in the sense that he was a British officer before the American Revolution. During the French and Indian War, he had served in Canada and also had served under Edward Braddock and was wounded at the Battle of Monongahela. After the war, he didn't have enough money or the connections to rise above the rank of major in the British Army, so he leaves the service. He'll actually seek the help of a provincial war buddy that would who would help him acquire a plantation in Virginia. That was George Washington. But when the Revolution begins, he immediately throws his hat back in the ring and seeks a field command. And on June 18th, Hancock had sent word to Washington that the Northern Department was in need of a commander. Ever since Montgomery had taken over the Northern Army because of Schuyler's failing health, Schuyler had spent his time in Albany moving men and supplies to Canada. And whoever was in command of the army was in the command of the army in Canada. And that's how it always worked. We have this revolving door of commanders in the American Army, and they all had taken command of the American forces while they were in Canada. But by the time Gates arrives, the American Army is already back in Crown Point. So thus, the command would fall back to Philip Schuyler. Except Gates doesn't think that's how that's going to work. So he thinks that he's going to take over command. But Schuyler was one of the first major generals that was enlisted by Congress, so by seniority, he holds the right to command the Army of the Northern Department. Well, it would have fallen to Congress to step in. They sent word to Gates that the orders intended for him to take command of the troops in Canada. But since the troops were now back on American soil, that command would revert back to Philip Schuyler. Gates, being the good soldier that he was, gladly agreed. However, John Sullivan was less positive over the Gates promotion. You see, Sullivan's commission as a major general was also older than Gates. Sullivan, however, felt he was being passed over and would eventually resign his commission. One man who was excited about the Gates promotion was Benedict Arnold. The two men had a friendly relationship. All throughout Benedict Arnold's time in Canada, the two men were corresponding, and he was talking about the situation that was going on up there and asking his advice on how to handle some stuff. It would actually be a year before their friendship would actually sour, but that's a story for another time. The defense of Lake Champlain was actually decided in those last desperate days in Canada. It was decided that they were going to move the army to Crown Point. However, in a council of war on July 7th, Schuyler, Gates, Arnold, and Sullivan agreed that Crown Point was an outpost that could not be held and should be abandoned. They were in favor of fortifying the hill across the river from Fort Ty, known to the locals as Rattlesnake Hills. The council consisted of the principal commanders of the Northern Army. But when word got to the field commanders, they themselves decided to speak up. Many felt Crown Point was a position that should not be easily abandoned. And they will actually send word to Washington on their concerns, and Washington will weigh in and believe that this was a bad idea. In a letter to Gates, Washington stated how sorrowful a resolution your council and wished it never happened. Leaving Crown Point meant abandoning the lake, which would leave the Americans penned up at the south end of the lake. Schuyler felt that it was the right call. Crown Point was a peninsula and was vulnerable to being cut off by the British. Washington would agree. He had faith in his commanders. He believed that Schuyler knew what he was doing. Also, Washington wasn't up there. Schuyler and Gates, they both knew the area really well and believed in them, that they were making the right decision that was probably in the best interest of the army up there. So Arnold was sent to Crown Point to start moving men and supplies back down the lake to Fort Ticonderoga. On the British side of things, they have just pushed the American army out of Canada. The British troops couldn't march fast enough to keep up with the retreating Americans. So by the time all the marching is done, the British are staring at a large lake in front of them, and the Americans are at the other end of it. So what are you going to do now? Well, there was only one real answer: build a navy. Luckily for the British, they're one of the best naval powers in the world. They're going to have to build a lake navy that can match the Americans. The Americans already have 4 ships to their fleet, 3 of which were captured British ships, and the 4th was a captured Loyalist ship. So they do have the advantage. But let's face it, the British are one of the best naval powers in the world, so they really shouldn't have much of a problem building some sort of fleet on the lake to match the Americans. Their confidence was inspiring because they believed that they could head south in 8 to 9 weeks. Sailors, at least they thought, would be easy to find, but that's something that is going to prove to be a little difficult. Commodore Charles Douglas would be the man chosen to be put in charge of this lake navy. He would actually end up having to strip several of the ships that they have up in Quebec and on the St. Lawrence River of their manpower just to get enough sailors to operate on the lake navy. Another problem was the ships that he had that could be brought down to the to Lake Champlain would not make it past the rapids on the Richelieu River. See, the connector between the St. Lawrence and Lake Champlain was the Richelieu, and the Richelieu had a section of really bad rapids for about 12 miles. Arnold himself lost 2 ships trying to do the same thing during the spring thaw. So the British experiment with this idea of using what are called camels. These are floats that are lashed to the sides of boats that would raise the boat slightly out of the water. This way it won't drag on the rapids and hopefully can navigate. Well, they tried this on some of their transport ships, and the experiment failed miserably. So Douglas had to decide on a new way to move the ships the 12 miles from Chambly to St. John. And the only real option was moving them over land. The schooners Maria, Brunswick, and the captured American gondola, now named Royal Convert, were disassembled and hauled around the rapids. What Douglas had ordered was all the extra supplies, rigging, guns, anything like that, would be taken off. What they also did was they started removing planking. They removed planking from the bottom of the boat so that they could run, they would be able to run large poles through so that the ship could be lifted up and the men could carry it. They also removed some of the deck planking, anything extra that they could do to move these ships the 12 miles overland so that they can get them into St. John where they could be reassembled and put in the water. Now, at the south end of the lake, the American defensive strategy was now moving into a two-pronged system, a land and a water. On land, Schuyler chose to use Fort Ty and the high ground across the river. As for the water, that was underway since last winter. If you remember during the Canada campaign, Schuyler had built a fleet of bateaux at Fort George so that he could move men and supplies north. With spring coming, Schuyler thought he could expand his boat-building ventures. He wanted larger vessels. But they couldn't be built at Fort George because they would have to be then carried overland to Lake Champlain. So Schuyler needed something that was on the lake, that was capable of milling the necessary lumber for the ships, that had the artificers, or at least places for artificers to set up for making sails, artillery, shot, chains, nails, any of the metalworks. They needed carpenters. They needed places to build slips so that the ships could be built and then pushed into the water. There was only one place he was going to find that so very close to Fort Ty, and that was Skanesboro. Skanesboro was on the lake, but the problem was it was deep in the wilderness. So it would be up to Hermanus Schuyler, Philip Schuyler's brother, to turn this small lake town into a shipbuilding community. In exchange for building ships there, Hermanus agreed to widen the roads, repair the bridges, making the town more accessible. The boats that Philip wanted to build were a simple design, but excellent for shallow waters. Now, they were going for the galleys that they were building in Philadelphia for the defense of the Delaware River, but the best they could come up with were these gondolas. They were a flat bottom with a V-shaped bow that could be powered by oars or a mainsail and topsail on a single mast. They carried a complement of 3 guns. They had a 1 12-pounder that sat in the bow. They had 2 9-pounders, one on each broadside. And they also carried a complement of swivel guns. But these were shallow water, fast-moving attack ships, and they could be built quickly. That was the most important thing. They could be built quickly. And if they could build 10, 15 of these ships in the time that it took the British to build 3 or 4, they could hold naval superiority on the lake. It was a numbers game, and Schuyler wanted to build as many ships as he possibly could. He needed to hold naval superiority because the British could come down at any point, and he needed ships that were ready to fight when the British arrived. By July 1st, they had 2 gondolas that were already pretty much ready. They just needed to be rigged up and given some cannon. There were 3 more in the stocks ready to be planked. With good weather, Hermanus Schuyler wrote his brother saying that he could probably have 1 gondola done a week. This progress sounded promising, but the fact remained that the British could arrive at any time. What Schuyler needed was shipwrights, but these were hard to come by. They were needed in almost every theater at this stage of the war. Congress offered generous conditions. Pay was 34 2/3 dollars a month, double what a Continental Navy carpenter got. They got 1.5 rations of food and 1/2 a pint of rum daily. They would be paid for every 20 miles of travel, making them some of the highest paid men in the Continental Service. And whoever would answer the call, it would take them time to get there. So Schuyler, for now, just had to resolve himself with building his gondolas as fast as possible, getting them rigged up and ready to go. Of course, on July 4th, the Declaration of Independence is signed. It would take almost 2 weeks before it reached the men of upstate New York. It brought focus back to the mission of the men, and when it was read aloud to them on July 28th, it was met with 3 cheers, and the men went back to work. See, this is something that we didn't talk about. When we talked about Washington's army, his men were ecstatic. The Declaration, they were cheering, they were pulling down, or at least patriots in New York City, were pulling down statues of King George. And the men of upstate New York, the army had just been beaten. They've been pushed out of New York. I'm sorry, out of Canada. They're now residing in upstate New York. It's backwoods, it's wilderness. You can lose focus. You can lose a sense of what this whole thing is all about. And when the Declaration is read to them on July 28th, they simply give it 3 cheers of huzzah and continue with their work. It brought them back into focus on what the mission is: build ships, defeat the British, preserve the colonies. So it's a very powerful thing to think about, that a simple piece of paper could give you the fire and drive to take on one of the best naval powers in the world. It's also not really a surprise that the unnamed hill across from Fort Ticonderoga would be newly named Mount Independence. With this renewed vigor, the arms race on the lake was well underway. And that's where we're going to stop today. For this week, I should say. I want to thank everyone who's been very supportive of the podcast. Every week when I go on to Libsyn, which is the podcasting posting site that I use, I always see these large spikes in downloads. You know, usually the first day or two after I post a podcast, those spikes and, you know, here's who's listening. The number is always going up, and that's a lot because of those who have gone onto iTunes and have given me a 5-star rating or a review. And so if you're one of those people that has the ability to get onto iTunes and has not given me a 5-star rating, please do so. It's greatly appreciated. And if you're so inclined, you can also write a review. You don't have to. I'm not so concerned about the reviews so much as I am the 5-star ratings. The 5-star rating really helps the podcast because it shows iTunes that people are listening and will boost it as a suggested listening. So anytime anyone punches in something remotely to the American Revolution or to history, this podcast will get thrown in higher up on the list so that it will be more noticed by people who are looking. So if you can find the time to do, just go on iTunes, throw in a 5-star review, it's greatly appreciated. Also, for anyone that is new to the podcast, I haven't mentioned it in a while. And that's partially my fault. I know, I've mentioned it many times before, but the Facebook is always there as well. On Facebook, you can like the Facebook page. You can suggest the podcast to people. There is a link to get to the podcast online, not through iTunes, from Facebook. I just haven't mentioned the Facebook in a while. If you have any questions about anything we're talking about, at least at this stage of the war, or even things if you're catching up on episodes and there's something from way back, you had a question on the Boston Tea Party or something, throw it out there. As long as the question isn't in the future of our story, so you're not jumping ahead of where we are in the timeline, I'll gladly answer any question either on the Facebook or I will save it for the next podcast episode and I'll bring it up during the next podcast episode, which is totally fine. But yeah, remember the American Revolution podcast Facebook page is also there as well. So that's going to do it for this week. I hope everyone has a great week. When we come back next week, we're going to really talk about what goes into building the Navy on the lake, and the plethora of problems that the American forces are going to deal with when trying to build their lake navy. So until then, everyone have a great week, and as always, keep the powder dry.